Hello and welcome to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. And this week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shevitt to discuss a new strategy from American Airlines and Turkish Airlines' entry to the Australian market. Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Well, I'm good, Gordon. How are you?
Doing very, very well. What have you been up to this week?
The big news this week, or the big kind of goings-on this week, not so much earnings, but American Airlines did their big Investor Day event. And we're talking on Wednesday morning, New York time here. It's about 11 o'clock, a little bit later out where you are in Europe, Gordon. But American did their, was it Monday they did their Investor Day, I believe, anyway, earlier this week.
Monday, right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they had quite a lot to share.
Always refreshing. We've got some new airplanes coming, some strategy stuff. Why don't we start with the airplanes, Jay? We got orders from the big three: Boeing, Airbus, and Embraer. Let's kick off with the Boeing 737 MAX order, 85 plus some conversions.
Right. So they had between them and Delta and United, they were the only ones that hadn't yet ordered the MAX 10. That's again the largest version of Boeing's new MAX lineup, which isn't yet flying, hasn't yet been FAA certified. But the assumption is that it will eventually get certified, and American, made sure to get one of those, and makes total sense. No surprise that plane will fit very nicely in their network. It's not, you could see it as a competing product to the A321neo in some sense, a little smaller, but American has the A321neos as well, so. And so, for that matter, does United and Delta. So it's they're not mutually exclusive. All three of those airlines are going with both products. So there was that. And what else do we got? The Embraers. That's kind of interesting.
90 Embraer E175s.
Yep. Now that's the older generation E-jets. Embraer actually has a newer E2 version of that, but it doesn't work in the United States because of pilot scope clause issues. My understanding is that the plane is too heavy, and so you can't fly it with regional subsidiaries. You'd have to fly it with mainline crews, and that would, the economics just blow up at that point. So sounds to me like a big miscalculation from Embraer's part to not make that plane compatible with a scope, but perhaps there's more to that than I understand. But anyway, the reality is that American is going with the original E175s, and the classic. That's a good name for it.
Yeah, and, I just love Jay to have been in that. Not love, but it would have been interesting, shall I say, a bit more diplomatically, to have been in that board meeting at Embraer when they discovered that the shiny new plane or proposed plane wasn't going to suit the biggest market for it with the scope clauses.
They'll stick with the classics, and it'll do the job. And we can, I don't know how much we can get into it today. Certainly, stay tuned for the next issue of Airline Weekly. We have a lot more on this. But the regional network for American, when I say regional, it's the stuff that they outsource to. Now, they happen to own their, they have wholly owned subsidiaries that fly their regional airplanes. But they're, let's say, small and medium-sized markets. I mean, that network domestically, they see as a competitive advantage. And it's one of several competitive advantages that they believe will eventually close the profit gap that they've been really, they've had chronically now versus United and Delta. I checked this morning, the last time that American was not dead last among the U.S. big three was 2017. That year, they came a little ahead of United. Very different world back then. So they really, and this is true even during the pandemic, 2020, 2021, when everybody was losing money, Americans' margins were even worse during those years. So they know that they have to do something. And they have done a lot. Their network has changed rather dramatically, which I'm sure we'll get to in a moment here, but I don't think we finished the airplane orders yet, have we, Gordon?
Well, just on the regional front for our international listeners who aren't quite so familiar with the intricacies of the domestic network. We're talking about the American Eagle brands here, aren't we?
Right. Exactly. So that's flown by crews that are, they're essentially different companies. They happen at American, they happen to be owned by American, but they're companies that have their own labor agreements and, sure, you know, the pilots are getting, yeah. And so it's really labor arbitrage is really the whole regional airline industry in the U.S. is, at the end of the day, it's all about labor arbitrage, kind of a unique situation in the world. You won't see that in other places. I mean, a little bit in Europe and, you know, elsewhere, but very, very unique in the U.S.
One thing I did see with regard to the regional order was some fleet standardization measures that American are going to be putting in. So on the new E175, so if I can call them that, the incoming deliveries, Embraer is going to supply those in a two-class setup, total of 76 seats. And it means American is going to be retiring their 50-seater single-class regional jets, all of those expected to leave the fleet by the end of the decade. So more premium seating, a bit more standardization, and some of the bigger plane perks, high-speed satellite Wi-Fi, in-seat power, that sort of thing. I think it was Devon May, the CFO, he sort of described it as a balanced level of CapEx, describing it as a steady stream of new aircraft over the coming decade. But it's not the biggest order we've seen in recent years, but it's definitely a beefy one. I think they've got something like 440 aircraft now on order, speaking more broadly, Jay.
Yeah, they renewed their fleet rather early. They back in, I don't know when it was, 2011, 2012, 2013, kind of that early 2010s, they placed just massive orders for airplanes. And it was very expensive, and they had to, you know, sort of manage all the debt associated with that over the, you know, ensuing years. They've gotten to the point now where their fleet is very modern, and they don't have as much fleet debt as, you know, like certainly as United. Now they just, you know, they just did this new order, so that's going to add some new CapEx obligations there, some financial obligations, but not terribly large. American, you know, probably not the place to get into now. American does have more debt than his peers. They do, you know, have that issue. But in terms of their fleet needs, they're pretty good. They're in pretty good shape. I mean, they've got, and very simplified. You know, you can argue that perhaps they went too drastically simplified their fleet during COVID. They got rid of the 330s and the 767s. And am I forgetting anything? I'm not sure. But they're pretty lean and mean now. I mean, it's really just, and Gordon, if I'm forgetting something, step in. But I think it's just the 777s and the 787s on the wide body side now, right?
It's been a while since I've been on an American 76.
Yeah, they. So I think they're in pretty good. You know, they're pretty lean and mean as far as the fleet goes. And someone could, if someone can correct me if I'm missing something, I may be just having brain freeze here. But I think it's pretty lean and mean. And they that's a, you know, good news story for them. Their fleet is in pretty good shape. Now, you know, is their network in good shape? You know, that's a big discussion. I was, you know, spent a lot of this morning, in fact, kind of looking at their network from every which angle, and a couple highlights here. So American really has the crown jewel in their network is clearly Dallas Fort Worth. I mean, it's their largest hub. It's, you can make the argument that it's the second, you know, most profitable or strongest hub in the United States. I mean, you can never quite touch Atlanta in that regard, but DFW's it's probably second. It's a fast growing economy. It's a fast growing population. It's just got a ton of business travel there. So that's an area. And I have in front of me, for the upcoming second quarter, if you compare the seats that they're going to fly for Q2 versus the seats that they flew in Q2 of 2019, Dallas is up about 13%. So they're bigger there now than they were pre-pandemic. That's also true of Charlotte, another crown, you know, another jewel in the crown, so to speak. That is up 18%. Miami's up 18% or 19% actually. Phoenix is up a little 4%. Washington National, there's some growth constrictions there as far as infrastructure, but even there, they're up 14%. So they've really grown what you might call their mid-continent hubs. Even Charlotte is kind of inland. You could sort of think of that as mid-con. But then the coastal hubs is where they've had a lot of problems. And it's where United and Delta have arguably been stronger and arguably are better launching pads for intercontinental expansion. So American, sure enough, is the weakest of the big three when it comes to serving Europe, ex-London anyway, and London is very important. And same in Asia, very weak in Asia, except Tokyo. And yes, Tokyo is very important. But they haven't been able to capitalize as much as their peers on the intercontinental boom that has taken place really over the past year and a half, say, you know, post-COVID overseas demand boom from the US, you know, with the dollar being strong and all that. So they haven't had that. Now, if you look, they used to be rather strong in Chicago, but always kind of, you know, playing second fiddle there to United. Philadelphia, you know, pretty good hub. You can do a lot to Europe in the summer in particular, but it's also not New York or Chicago or Los Angeles. It's, you know, it's just you can't fly to Asia from Philadelphia. It just doesn't work. There are limitations, just not that big of a market. Los Angeles, just hyper competitive. You're competing with not only Delta United, but all sorts of foreign airlines flying into there. So sure enough, and New York as well. Now, sure enough, very, very competitive market and one where American has historically struggled. Sure enough, Chicago, again, comparing Q2 now versus Q2 pre-pandemic, Chicago down 18%. Philadelphia down 15%. Los Angeles down 28%. New York, they're actually, they've added a couple of JFK flights like Delhi and I think Athens. And so they're actually up in New York, in JFK. But if you add all three New York airports together, they're down 10%. So you can see they've really downsized on their coastal hubs and have doubled down on their mid-con hubs. And, you know, again, I hesitate to go too deep in the weeds here for this podcast, but sort of as a way to fortify their coastal flanks, they've tried things like alliances. So they have one with Alaska, which is working pretty well. That's for sort of their West Coast flank. And then East Coast flank, they tried to form something with JetBlue, but that eventually was dissolved by a judge. So that's kind of gone now, and we'll see. They did kind of hint that perhaps they might be able to do something more with JetBlue again, now that JetBlue can't merge with Spirit, and it's a little bit murky, but Robert Isom, the CEO, kind of gave a little bit of a hint to that. So probably talking too much here, but in any case, that's a general overview of their network and how it's changed since before the pandemic.
Superb, Jay. I think that was one of your best. Absolutely fantastic. I know Vasu Raja, the American CCO, he was talking about the explosive population growth in the Sun Belt in particular, and said that the airline has been taking note of those changing population trends. He said, and I quote, "Increasingly, the Sun Belt states are producing economic growth at a premium to the nation's average, and other states are at a deficit. So they're going where the people are, they're going where the money is." Interesting stuff.
Definitely.
Let's talk very briefly, Jay, about the loyalty program. In 2023, they said on the Investor Day on Monday, around 65% of Americans' revenue was driven by members of its Advantage program. Of that 65%, however, one quarter was composed of Advantage members who don't spend on premium products such as first class, premium economy, or the co-branded credit card. So Raja said that he really wants to start tailoring more premium products to those travelers. It's a huge market, something we've discussed before, but it really looks like American are doubling down when it comes to frequent flyer and loyalty.
100%. So, and that was a very good summary. I actually have the same, some of those same statistics that you just cited that I have in my article here. So here's, if you have any doubts about what Gordon just said, so
American, how dare you?
Yeah, not that you should ever have any doubts, but just in case there's a couple, you know,
I'm not above scrutiny, so like you say, Jay, if you hear anything that doesn't sound quite right, gs@skiff.com, js@skiff.com if you've got something that needs tweaking. But for the record, what have you got for us stats wise? Sorry to interrupt.
Right. No, on the contrary, this is going to confirm exactly your thesis here, what you said about how advantage is so important to their strategy. They mentioned the word advantage 57 times in their investor day event. So you can see that it's very much a priority. It's very much in their thinking. Just want to mention two more points about that. So American says that they are not earning as much money from their co-branded credit cards, which is attached to the loyalty program, as United and Delta now. So Delta famously has this super, super ultra lucrative partnership with American Express, where Delta gives American Express miles, and those miles can be used for American Express's customers, you know, when they get these cards, whatever. So hugely, hugely lucrative for Delta. United, I remember it was a few years ago. I can't remember how many years ago. Maybe it was pre-pandemic. I can't remember exactly, but they were kind of complaining of the same things. We don't make as much money from our credit cards as Delta does. And they wound up renegotiating that contract that they have in their case, it's with JP Morgan Bank. And now they have what's apparently a very, very good deal too. But American's unique. They actually have two main providers. It's Barclays Bank and Citi. And they negotiated those really 10 years ago after the American US Airways merger. So what they're saying now is that, well, we don't, you know, those contracts are 10 years old. We don't have the economics that United and Delta have. But hang on, investors, you know, stand by. We're going to make, you know, something's coming. We're working on renegotiating that deal. So they think that can help close the margin gap. In addition to that, they kind of stressed that it wasn't just about this new, you know, contract deal. They really want to make the program, you know, the best in class. They're really trying to, just make it more than just a strict loyalty program. They almost want to use it as a kind of almost like an incentive program to, and what they said is just to be more direct here. They said they're going to give the most benefits are going to go to the people who do four things. One is that the people that buy the higher value products and services. So, you know, people that buy the first class seats or, you know, to do the upgrades. Two, it's the people that have the credit card. Makes sense, right? So if you have an American credit card, then you're going to, you know, be treated better than if you don't have one. Number three, the people, this is interesting, the people who book their tickets through American's own distribution channels. And this is unique. American is being very aggressive in asking their customers to book through their own channels rather than through third parties. Much more aggressive than United and Delta. And it's very controversial in terms of, I mean, it's very questionable whether or not that's a good strategy. It's kind of open up for debate. You can sort of, you know, weigh that on your own. But, and then the fourth thing.
You can guarantee, though, if it works, the competitors will be looking and considering it as well.
Yep, for sure. And then the fourth thing is that the most awards will go to people who hold elite status, which makes sense. You know, if you're a gold member or a platinum member, et cetera, you're going to, have more benefits than obviously if you were not status. So there you go. They really, as you know, to go back to your original point, Gordon, American is very, very intent on squeezing as much money and not only just as much money from the business but making it central to their strategy.
We have a lot more we could be discussing about American. We don't have time, unfortunately, but there's going to be lots more detail on American strategy, including some of the retrofits that are lined up for the Airbus A319 and 320s. That will be in the Airline Weekly issue, which is dropping, depending on when you're listening to us, in a few days' time, or if you're lucky, it might already be with you. But lots more detail there, and plenty more from Jay too. Stay with us after this very short break. We will be heading to the land down under and discussing Turkish Airlines' introduction to the Australian market. Stay with us. I'm going to record that one again. After this very short break, we will be discussing Turkish Airlines and their introduction to the Australian market. Stay with us. Hello, welcome back to the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. I'm Gordon Smith. I'm joined this week by Jay Shevitt. You doing well, Jay?
I am.
We've been very busy in part one discussing all things American. We're going to pivot to Istanbul, Singapore, and Melbourne, because what do those three seemingly random cities have in common?
Well, they're all being flown now by Turkish Airlines. Is that what you're getting at there?
Yeah, lucky guess. Yes, this is the introduction of Turkish Airlines to the Australian market. They made their debut just a few days ago. And really, if you've been living in a hole for the past 15, 20 plus years, Turkish Airlines, they fly to more countries than any other carrier, from Afghanistan to Zambia, literally everything in between. But Australia had been proving to be rather elusive, at least until now. You have a flight a few days ago going from Istanbul, huge mega hub there, to Singapore, and then Singapore down to Melbourne. On paper, it looks like a very, very standard route for an airline like Turkish, but this took a bit of toing and froing, some regulatory hurdles. Currently, it's only thrice weekly. That's ye olde English for three times weekly for any younger listeners. And it's
we've got Geoffrey Chaucer here on the...
We've got a three times weekly service via Singapore. Doesn't sound like it's much of a threat to the incumbents, Qantas, Emirates, Qatar Airways, and others, but things are about to get interesting, because the Australian government, they've approved more flights to and from Turkey. New permissions will take the maximum number of weekly services from 7 up to 21. And then from this October, October 24, that figure will rise to 28 a week, and then ultimately to 35 a week by the end of 2025. Currently only serving Melbourne, but Sydney is due to join the Turkish Airlines route map before the end of the year, further encroaching on Qantas' home turf. Jay, what's your take on the introduction of Turkish Airlines to Australia?
Well, I'll say just to start that the Istanbul hub is a, we talked about how Atlanta is the greatest hub in the United States. Perhaps Istanbul is the greatest hub on Earth. I don't know, Atlanta might want to dispute that.
At least the Atlanta of the East.
Yeah, Atlanta of the East. I mean, Dubai might have an issue with you there.
Or, I think they would.
There's some European hubs that are might want to get into this argument, but incredible hub Istanbul, and Turkish Airlines has just built an amazing machine where they can fly pretty much anywhere on Earth. And as you said, Australia was kind of the last white spot on their network. Now remember that from Dubai and some of the Gulf hubs, Doha as well, you can do Australia nonstop. And so that was always an advantage for Emirates and Qatar Airways relative to Turkish, is that they can do Australia, but Turkish couldn't. So Turkish is trying to erase that advantage now. And as you mentioned, they still have to go through Singapore, and eventually they'll get to the point where they can do the nonstops, and we'll see. Did they say yet, Gordon, what aircraft they're going to use? I know, Qantas is for those super ultra long range. They're going to use the A350-1000, kind of a modified version of it. But did Turkish announce yet?
So the first flights this week was a 777, and then I believe it's moving to a 787 with the goal of moving it onto 350 in due course.
So they eventually the nonstops will be maybe 350-1000s, or we'll see how that evolves. But now they can do Australia, at least serve it, and they have that going for them relative to what the Gulf carriers are able to provide. Now it's I know we're not talking about this specifically, but the one thing that Turkish Airlines was able to do, one of several things that Turkish was able to do that the Emirates and Qataris of the world couldn't, was just access all of Europe with narrow body aircraft, which is a huge advantage. I mean, you can fly to all these, you know, medium sized cities in Europe with a, 150 seat aircraft and, you know, very low risk, and just pump that traffic into your Istanbul hub and send it out all over the world. Can't do that in Dubai, for a lot of places, particularly like as far, going as far west as a place like where you live, Gordon, out in Lisbon. So they each have their own advantages. Now, will these markets do well? I can tell you, Australia, Qantas announced their earnings a couple weeks ago, and they keep saying this every time they open their mouth. They talk about how well those ultra long flights are doing. So they do, the first one was the super long flight was Perth, London a couple years ago, and that apparently has just done fantastically well. I want to say they started Perth, Paris again.
It's coming soon. Coming this summer.
Coming soon? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seasonal to Rome, you might be thinking of, Jay.
Seasonal to Rome. Okay. Yep. And they said, I believe that one, unless they said it was the Paris one booking well. And maybe it was the Rome, but they seem to be working very well. So they're very, very eager to get Sydney, Melbourne, or London nonstops going. As well as, nonstops to New York from Australia's eastern coast. The unfortunate thing, and the frustrating thing, this will come as no surprise to anyone who listens to this podcast, the aircraft that they need for that are running behind schedule. So they're going to have to wait. I'm sure Turkish is probably going to, they might have to wait a little bit longer than they wanted to as well to do their nonstops from Istanbul to Australia. Australia's a good market. You got a lot of tourism, you got a lot of you got some business, you got a lot of expats, immigrant community, all sorts of, so it's and you can't, it's so far from most everything that there really aren't alternative forms of transportation. As far as I know, there are no buses running from Istanbul to Sydney, unless correct me if I'm wrong, but
that would be a very, very long Greyhound Omega bus, rather you than me.
that's something. I don't even think I would do that when I would have done that when I was in college, and I did some crazy bus journeys then. But that went even beyond the younger Jay. So there you have it.
And thanks for listening to the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Don't forget, you can always contact us via email. My address is gs@skiff.com. That's G for Gordon, S for Smith. And J is available at js@skiff.com. That's J for J and S for Shabbat. Thanks to Jay for joining me this week and wherever you are in the world. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Check out airlineweekly.com for a new issue every Monday and updates on the latest airline news throughout the week.